Warriors of ancient days used to gather to tell the stories of the great battles of the past. They would talk about the brave men and women of days gone by. And most important of all, they would remember the faithfulness of the Lord and his mighty power, which made the seemingly impossible possible. Remembering the great victories of the past would give them strength and courage to face their new battles. And it would remind them of what was to never be forgotten, that those who trust in the Lord will not be disappointed. By way of review, to catch us up today with where we have been, we met David briefly last time in 1 Samuel chapter 16. The Lord sent Samuel to Bethlehem to anoint as the next king of Israel one of the sons of a man named Jesse. And when Samuel saw Jesse's oldest son Eliab, he felt confident that this must be the one that God had chosen. He was tall, he was well built, he was handsome, he looked like he would make a great king. But the Lord had someone else in mind. God told him in 1 Samuel 16:7, "Don't consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Well, one by one, seven of Jesse's sons were brought before Samuel, but none of them were God's choice. Samuel asked Jesse if he had any other sons, and Jesse said, "Well, my youngest son David is still out in the field tending the sheep." Samuel asked that he be brought in. And as soon as David came before Samuel, the Lord said to Samuel, "Rise and anoint him. This is the one." The youngest of Jesse's sons, considered so insignificant and unqualified that he had not even been asked to attend this meeting with Samuel, turns out to be the one that the Lord had chosen for their king. The Lord described David as a man after his own heart in 1 Samuel 13:14, a person who loved the Lord and would seek the things of the Lord, to do the will of the Lord, the person who would care about the things that the Lord cared about and care about the people of the Lord, the way the Lord would care about them. Jesus said that the most important commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The thing that characterized David over everyone else was his love for God. There were others who were wiser, others who demonstrated more faith, others who possessed greater moral purity, others who had more raw physical strength, but there were none who loved God the way David did. This is the thing that set David apart. He was a lover of God. We're now entering into the portion of the book of 1 Samuel that is largely focused on David's story. David is one of the most significant people in the Old Testament. There's more written about David and his life than any other person in the Old Testament other than Moses. There are 60 chapters in the Bible devoted to the story of David, starting in 1 Samuel chapter 16, continuing through the book of 2 Samuel and into 1 Kings chapter 2. Then much of that material is either paralleled or supplemented in 1 Chronicles chapter 2 through chapter 29. David was a true warrior poet. David was a talented musician and poet, as well as being a renowned warrior and leader. He's credited as author of about half of the Psalms that we have in our Bible, which are poems and song lyrics. And under David's leadership, Israel would become the dominant military power in the region. As king, David will be considered the best Israel ever had. He's the king against whom all of their other kings will be measured and compared. Now, to prevent anyone from getting the wrong impression here, though, it should also be said that even though David was Israel's most celebrated king, and one of the greatest leaders in history, he was not without his faults. He had his failures and shortcomings, just like we do. And one of the things I appreciate about the Bible is its honesty about the failures of its featured people. Typically, ancient literature portrays its main characters as heroes with no faults or foibles. They are presented as larger-than-life characters. They are as if they were superheroes, a cut above everyone else. But the main characters in the Bible are presented with warts and all. As we have noted before, the hero of the Bible is the Lord, not the people. Psalm 20, verse 7, David wrote this. He said, "Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God." Well, let's flip over to 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel 17, it tells the famous story of David and Goliath. The story of David and Goliath is one of the most popular and well-known Bible stories of all time, if not the most well-known and popular of all time. It has come to be considered the quintessential underdog story. Rather than it being primarily an underdog story, though, it is a story about courageous faith in the Lord and the Lord's faithfulness to his people. See, without the Lord being with David, the outcome of this story would have been very different. Our modern culture tells us to trust in ourselves, to believe in ourselves, to have faith in ourselves. If David were alive right now, he would tell us to trust in the Lord, to believe in the Lord, and trust not in the strength of any person, including yourself. The times David trusted in himself were disastrous. When he trusted in the Lord, amazing things happened. See, this is only an underdog story on the surface. When the Lord is on our side, it's an unfair fight in the other direction. You see, Goliath had no chance of winning. Well, a few years have passed since that strange day when Samuel came to Bethlehem and anointed the young David for some unstated purpose. It's believed David is probably in his late teens now, not quite 20, which was the earliest someone was recruited and allowed to serve in the military in Israel at that time. During these intervening years, David served for a time as a musician in the royal court, playing music for Saul to help soothe his tortured soul. David also continued helping his father, Jesse, shepherding the family sheep during this time. David's three oldest brothers are serving in Saul's army. Israel's arch rival, the Philistines, have once again gathered their forces for war against the Israelites. They have advanced into Israel's territory, and they're assembled on one of the hills that surrounded the Valley of Elah. The Israelites have met the Philistine challenge and assembled their forces on the hill on the opposite side of the valley. So here these two armies face each other for war with the valley between them. The Valley of Elah is a stop that people usually make on a tour of Israel because it's the location of this very famous story of David and Goliath. It looks very similar to one of the smaller valleys in this region that we live in here. In fact, that was one of the things that struck me about the Valley of Elah when I saw it myself for the first time. I was like, huh, looks a lot like a valley. One of the things that people like to do is collect a stone from the Valley of Elah for obvious reasons. I'm surprised there are any stones at all left in that valley. In fact, I suspect that the Israel's government probably hauls stones in at night when no one's looking and then dumps them into the valley for the tourists to, you know, take one with them on their trip back to wherever they're from. But beginning in verse 4, it says here, "A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's beam, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. So this huge man from the Philistine army comes forward to challenge the Israelites. His name is Goliath, a champion warrior of the Philistines. He stood almost 10 feet tall, was fully clad in armor from head to toe, and he had a full complement of the best weapons of the day. He was not only tall, but he was very strong and powerful. To help you visualize how big this man was, consider that he stood almost 2 feet higher than I can reach. The chest armor that he wore weighed about 125 pounds. His spear was like a large fence post, with the iron spearhead attached to it weighing 15 pounds. It's the average weight of a bowling ball. You would have to be a very powerful individual just to carry the armor and weapons around that this man had. Goliath, he stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. So Goliath, he challenges the Israelites to send out their best warrior for a fight. Fight one-on-one, and the people of the loser would then surrender to the winner. Goliath came forward and he shouted, "I defy the armies of Israel." King Saul and all of his men, it says, were dismayed and terrified. And that word in Hebrew, translated dismayed, it literally means to be broken, to be shattered, to be ruined. Powerful, emotional reaction, description we have here. This dismay, this fear, this discouragement. They're broken, shattered, ruined people in the face of this huge man. King Saul was the obvious candidate to fight Goliath. Saul, you may remember, he's the biggest and strongest that Israel has. He stands over a head taller than anyone else in Israel. But even Saul is dwarfed by this man. Saul had been chosen king because the people wanted someone to go before them and fight for them. But Saul, he wants no part of Goliath. Verse 16, "For 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand." So Goliath would come forward and make his challenge to the Israelites every morning and every evening for 40 days. And all this time, there was no one in the army willing to come forward to take up his challenge. And every day this challenge wasn't met, the spirits of the men grew weaker. The best opportunity to defeat Goliath would have been on the first day he made that challenge. The longer they allowed him to go on, the harder it became for Saul and his men to muster the needed courage to go out and fight him. It's that way in our life too. The longer we allow things to go unchallenged in our life, the more difficult it is to defeat them, isn't it? Sin in our life, left unchallenged, it grows and it gets more difficult to stop with each passing day. The best day to meet the challenge is the first day. Maybe even right now, in this very moment as you're sitting here, the Lord has brought something to mind that you need to deal with, you ought to deal with. Deal with it the first opportunity you get. Don't put it off. The longer we put these things off, the harder it is to deal with them. After 40 days, these men are in such a deep hole, it's hard to imagine them ever climbing out of it. Now Jesse said to his son David, "Take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers and hurry to their camp. seen his change, see, from the battle lines to David's home with his father Jesse. He says, take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit. See how your brothers are and bring back some assurance from them. There was Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting against the Philistines. So David is sent by his father Jesse to the battlefield to check on his older brothers, to bring news back to his father, and to deliver this care package that he's put together for them. Early in the morning, verse 20, David left the flock in the care of a shepherd, loaded up, and set out as Jesse had directed. And he reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle position, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. And David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brothers how they were. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw this man, they all fled from him in great fear. It's like you're like, there he is. It says they went out shouting the war cry. I don't think so. After 40 days of humiliating taunting by Goliath, it's probably more like a war whimper. Come on, you guys. Let's go get them. These are deeply discouraged, frightened people. Now the Israelites had been saying, do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He'll also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel. David asked the men standing near him, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And they repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, this is what will be done for the man who will kill him. See, David, he finds this arrogant defiance of this Philistine unbearable. He can't stand having the Lord disrespected like this. Goliath, he's been referring to the Israelite army as the servants of Saul. That's the way the men have been looking at themselves too, as Saul's servants, Saul's army. But look at how David refers to the Israelite army. He calls them the armies of the living God. See, in David's mind, this is the army of the Lord, and Goliath is making a direct challenge to God. This is not Saul's war, this is God's war. Saul and his men, they've been suffering from an identity crisis. They've forgotten who they are, that they're the army of the living God. When we forget who we are, whose we are, we find ourselves being intimidated by the enemy too, don't we? Christian, don't forget who you are. You're the people of the living God. David's attitude is very different from that of Saul and his men. David's confidence rests in the Lord rather than in Saul. He isn't dismayed or terrified by Goliath's challenge because he knows the Lord is with him. Saul and his men, on the other hand, they're terrified because they have their confidence in themselves. When our confidence is in ourself, what are we left with when we face something bigger than us? Fear, discouragement, intimidation. On the other hand, confidence in an infinite God who loves you can produce hope even in the face of overwhelming odds. King Saul, he's so intimidated by Goliath that he offers to give the man who kills Goliath great wealth, his daughter in marriage, and exempt his father's family from taxes. That sounds like a pretty good deal, especially the taxes thing. Saul responds to the problem by throwing money at it, hoping it will go away. A reward is not the solution to the problem. a restored faith and trust in the Lord is the solution to their problem. Verse 28, it says, when Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle. Now what have I done? Said David. Can't I even speak? He then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter, and the men answered him as before. So David's oldest brother, Eliab, he hears David speaking with the other men, and he gets really angry. He takes out his frustration on his little brother. He's very condescending to David, accuses him of being conceited. He basically says, oh, shut up and go back home and tend the little sheep. This is man's work, not a place for a boy. The treatment David receives from his big brother, it's typical for anyone willing to step out away from the crowd and do what's right, to do what everyone else is afraid to do. When you step out from the crowd, you can expect to be ridiculed, accused of being a glory seeker. You may be abandoned and hung out to dry. Your motives may be questioned, but do it anyway. It's better to step out and do what's right than to go along with the crowd. Face the giant, even if everyone else shrinks back and leaves you all alone. There are more people than you realize that are hoping and praying that someone will step out and lead the way. In David's case here, after he stands up to Goliath and kills him, the rest of the Israelite army will charge up behind him and then fight the rest of the Philistines. They're going to find great strength in the courage and the faith that David displays. People will follow your example. They're looking for an example to follow. The need for people filled with faith and courage is as great today as it was then. People are crying out for godly men and women to step up. Be one of those who steps up. Verse 31, it says, what David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. And Saul replied, you're not able to go up out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man, and he's been a warrior from his youth. Saul tells David, you know, that's a real noble thing you're offering to do there, son, but let's be reasonable. I mean, you're only a boy. This Philistine is an experienced warrior. You don't stand a chance against him. But David said to Saul, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand or the paw of this Philistine. So David, he recounts some of his fighting experience and how fighting this Philistine will be no different than fighting the lion or the bear that he's face in the past. This is just another wild beast. The Lord has rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, and he will rescue me from the paw of this Philistine. David looks back to the Lord's faithfulness in the past. That's important for us to do the same thing, isn't it? When we face difficulties, remind ourselves of God's faithfulness to us in the past. Remember how the Lord helped you before. He hasn't changed. Now, I know one of the arguments that we use on ourself To not trust the Lord's faithfulness this time is to say to ourselves, oh, I don't deserve the Lord's help this time. I was a better person then. I want to remind you, not to offend you, but to remind you that you didn't deserve the Lord's help last time either. He helped you because he loves you. You didn't deserve it then. You don't deserve it now. He loves you. Trust him. David points out that Goliath has defied the armies of the living God. David knows he won't be fighting alone. Goliath has picked a fight with God. See, rather than measuring the size of the problem that he's facing, David remembers the size of the God he's trusting in. Rather than measuring the size of the problem he's facing, David remembers the size of the God he's trusting in. Good thing for us to remember, huh? Well, Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. It's hard for us to believe that Saul agrees to let David go and fight Goliath. I mean, think about the implications of what he's just done. David is going out against Goliath, representing the entire nation of Israel. Saul is putting the whole nation on the line with this young shepherd from Bethlehem, untrained in military maneuvers. It shows just how desperate Saul has become. David going out to fight Goliath for the nation of Israel is a significant turning point in the careers of both David and Saul. On this day, David begins to replace Saul as the leader of the people, even though it's going to be several years before David actually sits on the throne as king. See, the people, they had asked for a king to go before them and fight their battles for them. Saul has ceased to do that. Saul now has the people going before him and fighting his battles for him. This should have been Saul's fight. But now he's sending David out to fight his battle with Goliath. Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. Put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. I cannot go in these, he said to Saul, because I'm not used to them. So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in a pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand approached the Philistine. David chooses to use the weapons that he's familiar with, his sling and his stones. See, the important thing is not what weapons are used against the enemy, but who's behind the weapons. David is marching out in the strength of the Lord. That's what's important. We can learn an important lesson from David's example here, can't we? The weapons are not the main thing. Having the Lord is the main thing. We need the Lord above everything else. There was nothing wrong with using weapons. There would have been nothing intrinsically wrong, I believe, with David actually using Saul's armor and weapons, if he had chosen to do that. But when our trust is in the weapons, the machinery, the methods, the things, rather than the one who empowers the weapons, well, then the weapons, they can just get in the way. What are David's weapons here? David's weapons, the stones, were these smooth, round rocks, 2 to 3 inches in diameter, and this sling was a pouch with long thong attached to each end of it, which a rock would be placed in the pouch, and then it would be swung around, and then one of those thongs would be let go so that the rock would be propelled at high speed. This was a very deadly weapon in skilled hands. Well, meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals." David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." The thing that fills David's heart with so much confidence is his recognition of this fight being God's battle rather than merely his. There are lots of causes that you and I can fight for. But when we're fighting for the cause of the Lord, it's a whole different deal. The Lord is with us and he fills us with his inspiration and his power. His Holy Spirit comes upon us and he drives us forward as God's instruments to accomplish things that would be impossible otherwise. In David's remarks to Goliath here, he lets Goliath and all those who are watching know that it's against the Lord that Goliath has come. Look at how David pits Goliath and his weapons against the name of the Lord Almighty. He says, "You come with sword and spear and javelin versus the name of the Lord Almighty." In verse 48, as the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell face down on the ground like a big old tree. And so David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from the sheath. After he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. We don't see David fooling around here sparring with Goliath. He runs quickly forward and whammo! Strikes him in the head with a rock. And then he cuts Goliath's head off with Goliath's own sword. Well, when the Philistines see this, it fills them with panic and they start running for their lives. It says, David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword, drew it out. He cut off his head. And when the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. Then the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath, to the gates of Ekron. Their dead were strewn along the Charamain River, road to Gath and Ekron. When the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines, they plundered their camp. So the rest of the Israelites, they draw this tremendous strength from David's example of faith and courage. Faith and courage are infectious, aren't they? In closing, this common shepherd, filled with simple faith in his God, brings down this Philistine champion with a stone and puts the entire Philistine army on the run. Jesus, he tells us to become like little children with a simple faith in the Lord. And I can't imagine someone displaying childlike faith any more dramatically than David in this story. David, he didn't have sophisticated weapons. He is completely outmatched in physical size and strength and experience. But he loved the Lord and he trusted him with simple childlike faith. So when David, he starts whirling that sling, the Lord energizes his actions and he accomplishes something that would have otherwise been impossible. You may be facing terrifying giants in your life. These giants are impossible to defeat alone. But with Jesus Christ, simple, childlike faith and trust in Jesus Christ, the living God, you can face them. Face the giants in the strength of the Lord. And when the Lord brings victory, the whole world is going to know that there is a God in your life. Philippians 4:13. The Philistines and the Philippians were not related to each other, by the way. Philippians 4:13 says, I can do all this through him who gives me strength. David wrote in Psalm 27, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked advance against me to devour me, it's my enemies and my foes who will stumble and fall. Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident. One thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. For in the day of trouble, he will keep me safe in his dwelling. He will hide me in the shelter of his sacred tent and set me high upon a rock. Amen. Let's bow our heads. Father, we thank you for this story of David and his tremendous faith and trust in you in the face of insurmountable odds. Lord, I pray for my brothers and sisters in this room this morning who are facing insurmountable odds in their lives, giants, terrifying things, things that are overwhelming to them, Lord, things that are crushing their spirit, that are breaking them, that are ruining them. They're in dismay and fear. I pray for them, Lord, that they find their confidence in you, that they find courage in you, they find strength in you, Lord. Help us to trust you. Help us to take hold of you with that simple childlike faith that David did that day. We don't know how you're going to do it, Lord. Help us to just trust you in the middle of it all. Ask that you would breathe new life and strength into my brothers and sisters. You're good to us, Lord. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your faithfulness. Bless us today, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen.